September the 2nd, 1968, the cellist Jacqueline Dupré performed Anton Dvorak's cello concerto under the baton of Daniel Barenboim, her husband. Dvorak was Czech. The concert was held in support of the Czechoslovakian people, just 13 days after they had been invaded by the Soviet Union. It's difficult to imagine any performer better suited to the occasion, in terms of the passion and commitment of her performance, her evident thirst for life, her technical ability, and, looking back, her own tragic story. In 1968, she had but 3 years left before the debilitating symptoms of multiple sclerosis would utterly destroy her ability to perform. This podcast is not about Dupré, nor is it about the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia. But I think these two human stories can only serve to deepen our understanding of this truly remarkable work, performed on this podcast by Dupré, under Barenboim, with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. The first movement begins with a theme in the clarinets. It is remarkably like the theme from the last movement of Dvorak's Ninth Symphony, entitled From the New World, composed by Dvorak while he was living in New York. The shape of the Ninth Symphony theme is like the shape of the concerto theme. Dun, da, 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 dee, da, 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 da. If I sing the concerto theme in the same key. Da, 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 dum, da, 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 dum. The Ninth Symphony theme is a summons, two clear declamatory four-bar phrases played in the horns. In contrast, the cello theme begins gently, pensively, wistfully. So what do we learn from the similarity between these two themes? Was it intentional? The symphony was written in 1893 when the composer was director of the National Conservatory of Music in New York. It is a homage to North America, to the so-called New World, Dvorak's new home. The composer tries to capture a sense of the country and what he imagined to be its culture in the sounds he uses. This theme seems to conjure up the vastness of the land and its imperious nature. A year later, according to many commentators, Dvorak is homesick for Czechoslovakia. He writes music that reaches longingly across the Atlantic to his homeland. Interestingly, though, it retains the imperious shape of the New World. If the theme expresses homesickness for Czechoslovakia, it does not reject America. The first violins come in next with a more urgent version of this theme. I am such a violinist. The first time I played the concerto, I almost came in two bars early. I wanted to come in here after the first closing phrase. but actually it's here. The repeat of the closing phrase in the flute seems extra, like an add-on. Actually, it makes the phrase the standard length, 8 bars. Dvořák made me think, even as the phrase length was business as usual. I had to count. I couldn't rely on my instincts. I think this is characteristic of the entire movement. On the one hand, the music seems to follow a standard pattern. On the other, it demands that you pay attention. Now the violins enter with a more insistent version of the opening figure, which, after 8 bars of dotted build-up, leads to a point that you might expect a full orchestral version of the theme, like this. But this is what actually happens. The expected orchestral version of the theme is interrupted by another version of the theme, a foreboding, angst-filled one, intoned over anguished trills in the strings. The strings spill over the top into an extended, strident descending passage, from the bottom of which, not the top, a stoically heroic version of the tune bursts forth. At this point, I want to say two things. First, we have now heard the opening 2-bar theme 4 times, and each time its character has been entirely different. Development is the word we use in music. Music develops and grows. The development of thematic ideas, however that looks, draws us through the music and maintains our interest. This is not merely a process of addition or disguise or even repetition. It's a process of learning. Just as human beings grow as they learn about themselves, so music grows as it learns about itself. This theme is simple, banal even, yet the music around it continues to reveal its depth, its range of possible emotions, so that shown in different contexts, not only does it appear differently, it means different things. It moves from its gentle, longing beginning to a kind of urgent clarity, to foreboding angst, and finally heroic stoicism. Second, connections between parts of the music, the way one phrase moves to the next, is, to me at least, unexpected. Conventional processes of cause and effect are not immediately evident in the way one part of the music connects with the next. The violin's first statement of the theme does not naturally follow the clarinet's. The full orchestral heroic version is not the culmination of the rising crescendo, and yet despite this, the progress of the music is not odd or contrived or forced. It makes sense. Gradually the music quietens, the flute sounding a sunnier version of the theme over undulating sounds in the strings, all leading to the arrival of the D major second theme in the horn. The horn seems to come from nothing. Its first note emerges seamlessly from the upper note of the violin undulating figure. The stillness and serenity of this American-sounding tune is movingly countered by poignant contrapuntal lines in the violins. It is American-sounding because it uses the pentatonic scale. The tune da 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 dum corresponds to the pentatonic scale da 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 dum, an idiom that Dvorak identified in American folk music. The apparent American character of this tune, together with its serenity and beauty, seem at odds with the simple thesis that the concerto is about Dvorak's longing for Czechoslovakia. If that is the music's theme, Dvorak understands that there is no easy answer to his longing. This whole time the cello has been sitting there. We know that the orchestra is setting up the cello's dramatic entrance, and like concertos from other composers that we have heard before, we assume that the entrance will come at a logical point. The fact that everything seems to be winding down seems counterintuitive to such an entrance, but at least we think it will come in on the resolution of the cadence. So this is what I'm expecting. But this is what I get. It seems like it's a bar late. And what's more, it enters with an urgent, bold major sound rather than a wistful minor one. Recall the opening. Once more, the theme undergoes development. It learns something new about itself. It seems to me it is this sense of learning, a sense of growth, however you understand this, that shines through the cello's version of the theme. Learning continues through the music that follows. It comprises two musical characters, the one rhythmic, urgent and forward-driving, the other rhythmically freer, more reflective, more improvisatory, cadenza-like. The following illustrates what I mean. First, the cello's theme has astonishing rhythmic momentum. It is countered by freer, cadenza-like chords. These chords force their way into the repeat of the rhythmically driven theme, delaying its start by a beat. You can hear that the cello doesn't quite arrive with the clarinets. The rhythmic ambiguity is thoroughly dispelled by the cello's 16th note figure that seems almost like a metronomic technical exercise. But again, the rhythmic regularity is subverted by a freer, more ambiguous cadenza-like passage. For a moment, the music seems to be suspended as fragments of the theme are intoned by the woodwind over anguished trills, before it resolves onto a forward, urgent version of the first theme played out in running sixteenths. The music moves between resolution and ambivalence. But again, what I think is moving about this passage is not located in the two characters themselves, the emotions that they represent, but rather the musical being that links them, making the connections between them. You can think of that being as the cellist, the composer, or you, the listener. You make the connections between the passages, as the cellist makes them, and it is that process that you experience as meaningful. After intoning a dramatic minor version of the theme, the cello cries out almost in anguish before the music gradually subsides, setting up a repeat of the serene D major second subject. It's hard to imagine anything more beautiful. Once more, while the serenity of this theme contrasts the material that preceded it, I do not think the music's meaning lies simply in the contrast. The music of the second subject is heard in the context of the music that came before. We hear the one in the other, just as one sees vulnerability in the eyes of someone who is truly brave. The second subject is beautiful because it is enlivened by the consciousness of what came before. Again, you can think of that consciousness as the cellist, the music itself, or you, the listener. The mood shifts rapidly. An abrupt change in the cello leads to a series of passages of distinctive characters. I love this passage with the horns. Thank you. What is it that makes this music so moving? As I have said, commentators argue that the cello concerto expresses Dvořák's longing for his homeland. I think one could say that the profound beauty of Dvořák's music arises in the midst of the geographical problem his homesickness sets up. But that is not what the music is about. The music is neither a rejection of America nor a rosy-tinted embrace of Czechoslovakia. I think that Dvořák knows that location is not the answer to life. I think he knows that the answer is to turn the problems themselves, with all their twists and turns, into music. Thank you for tuning in to this Music Listening Project podcast with me, Mark Whale. You've been listening to Dvořák's Cello Concerto, performed by Jacqueline Dupré with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra under the baton of Daniel Barenboim.